This is a podcast from ABC Overnights. Here's Michael Pavlich.
Yeah, we're about to tell you about someone in our profile piece this morning, someone you probably never heard of, but someone I think you'll be better off for hearing their story. His name's Aidan de Bruin, and he was the amateur tramp. And we're joined this morning by his great-granddaughter, Melanie de Cull, and she's with us right now. Good morning, Melanie.
Good morning, Pav.
Thank you for joining us.
Nice to meet you.
You too. What an incredible story.
It is incredible indeed. Where would you like to start?
Well, it's a bit hard to know exactly where to start on this one.
Yeah.
I'll tell you. You obviously have this family connection with him, this man. We'll start at the beginning. Your great grandfather was born in England. And came to Australia when he was young. He was a printer initially, and he landed in Perth. Maybe you could take it up from there.
Okay, cool. So he moved to Perth in 1910. He was a printer, on the census and everything. It said printer, which really means a journalist, and they printed newspapers. He came from a family of three generations, I believe, of printers in London itself. Still trying to work out what the name of that place was, but anyway. So he came out here in 1910. 3 months later, his wife and my granddad, who was one at the time, 1 year old, joined him, and they were here for roughly... And yes, I'm in Perth, by the way, and it's an ungodly hour. But they joined him, and they were here for about a year. She hated it. You can imagine what it might have been like back in the day. But she was from a well-to-do banking family as well.
Okay.
And so she returned with my granddad, who was a toddler still, probably two, I guess, at that time. And we grew up with we had this last ever letter from Herbert. His name was actually Herbert Charles Cull.
All right, well, let's get to that one, okay? So he did this walk around the country, and before he did that, he did another walk. He walked from Fremantle to Sydney. As just a little preparation for the big walk. Now, during that walk, as you said, he landed in Australia, and his name was Herbert Cull. Somewhere between Fremantle and Sydney, he's decided to change his name to Aidan de Bruin.
Yeah, he actually went through a few different variants. So what happened was is that we didn't know much about him at all. My granddad was completely obsessed trying to find out what happened to his dad. My granddad was so obsessed. I've got all the files, all the letters, everything, and to no avail. Now, I reckon if the internet was around while my granddad was alive, he would have been in his element. But what ended up happening was that this guy was researching Aidan de Bruin for all his works and literature, but he stumbled across these four journals. And these journals state, and as a documented fact, how he walked around Australia. The idea was the perimeter around, he did Fremantle to Sydney first. He followed the railway lines and the telegraph poles. He got to Sydney, and then he ended up basically selling himself to the Sydney Daily Mail, which was a new publication back then, saying that, you know, his next plan was to walk around Australia and how they should employ him to write stories back to the paper about what he saw on his way. Yeah, I know.
Some people do anything to get published, Melanie. So just take you back a little bit further there. The first walk, okay, that he did from Fremantle to Sydney, that was supposedly in a bet. He had a bet with someone that he could walk that distance in 87 days. Now, that's an allegation that bet happened. He fell a few days short, unfortunately, so he lost the bet.
Yeah.
However, he did manage to drum up a bit of publicity. But before he left, you mentioned how he used to dabble in a little bit of fiction, and after his walk, he wrote quite a lot of fiction.
Yeah.
But before he left Fremantle, he wrote a couple of pieces for the local paper there, and they were serialised fiction pieces.
Yeah, they're really good stories too. The first one I read was The Pursuits of Mr. Peter Pell.
Right.
And it's all set in Perth, and as you're reading it, you can visualise it, you can see it, he wrote so well. And that was great. And then when he wrote for the Bunbury paper, which is a couple of hours south of Perth, and he wrote this one called The Mystery of the Nine Stars. And that was really good too. And it was really good and it was great. But it kept on dragging out. It kept on dragging out. And it kept on, I think I was up to chapter 34 or something like that. And he was still introducing new characters. And I'm going, what are you doing? What are you doing? Like, shouldn't you be winding this one up?
But he never did he?
He never finished it. No, he left in a hurry for whatever reason. Yeah. And I've got a couple of theories there. But
well, what are your theories?
Okay, so when the researcher guy named Colin Choate put all this stuff in front of me, and I started looking up, because it's all thanks to Trove, the digitalized newspapers. Yeah. So like without that, we would have had no idea. That's really where it all like came together.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to read these stories from that newspaper without obviously having a physical one. The digitalized style. Yeah. So I'm reading all these stories and everything, and I could pinpoint it to page 2 of an 8-page newspaper back in the day. His story would be there. Like, so before radio and television, you'd get your next chapter in the next edition, right?
Sure.
And, yeah, and so imagine that, you know, Neighbours, whatever, you know, the next edition. So back in the day. Where was I? So
it was serialized as often the stories were then.
And so anyway, I was able to pinpoint that I could go to next Tuesday or whatever it was paper, it'd be page 2 of that paper.
Yep.
And this kept on going and that was regular and I could find it. And then it got to a point where, oh, it's not there. Oh, where is it? Oh, now it's page 7. Of an 8-page newspaper. Oh, it's not in the next Tuesday paper. It's now a fortnight away. Mm. Now, whether there's a combination there of him being slack, maybe, or, you know, I think ultimately words were had.
Yep.
And he ended up saying, well, I'll show you something to write about. Because yeah, I think he was dragging the story out to keep his job.
Okay. Look, that'd be my theory. I even thought that perhaps someone had said something negative about his literature. And he took a person and said, "Bugger you, I'm going to walk to Sydney."
Yeah, here's something to write about, right?
No. So we've got this guy. He's turned up, Herbert Charles Cull. He's turned up in Perth. He's walked across to Sydney. He's arrived in Sydney as the name Aidan de Bruin. It's led to all sorts of problems as far as you trying to track your family tree, or your grandfather in particular.
Yeah.
Trying to track your family tree and find out what happened to his dad. But as we've found out through some bit of luck and through a wonderful piece of research that somebody did, you managed to tie these two together and find out that they were one and the same person. And then you would have no doubt been alerted to the adventure that was the life of the amateur tramp and the fact that he walked right around Australia. So he thought it was only going to take him a year.
That was the bigger bet, right? He thought that was going to take him a year. And, no, it didn't. He lost that one well and truly. It took him 2.5 years.
Yes. Missed by that much.
That one. But he survived. And that's the amazing thing about it is that, like, for when the rabbit warren opened for me, because it landed in my lap, basically, and then I had to share with family. So it was like when the rabbit warren opened, it was just like, why do we not know about this story? We all know about Burke and Wills. They crossed Australia. Unfortunately, they died. But here's this guy who did this mammoth walk, and he survived barely, but he did. He survived. And why don't we know this story in Australian history? Like, this is something that I feel like we possibly should have learned at school,
How did you go when you've discovered this?
Oh, man, what an adventure.
It would have been. You're looking for your grandfather. All of a sudden, your great-grandfather, all of a sudden you find out he had this life. He'd led this second life and he'd walked right around the country. I mean, it's not something you find out every day about your great-grandfather.
I know, my granddad was obsessed, right, but to no avail. And then this lands in our lap after he's passed and stuff, and I'm trying to share this with family, and I swear, I still believe that my family is still trying to come to terms with what happened. know? And it's like fortunate for me that I'm a bit more absorbed in it and have looked at more things than they have, and I try to share it with them. And they get it now. I just recently put on a play here in Perth to do with it all. And fortunately for me, a wonderful lady wrote who's a professional writer and director and producer, you name it, she's done it. And her name is Jenny Davis, and she's got an Order of Australia medal. And she's a friend of mine, and I shared this story with her, and she wrote me this one-act play, and we just finished putting that on here in Perth. And crazily, and I think you might have been told, but yesterday was actually 100 years since he completed the walk.
Yeah, which is funny how that's all lined up.
I know. It's just crazy. And it's like, I think there's more to be found out about it, because when the West Australian in here in Perth, which is our major paper over here, they did an article in November. And I believed it was just going to be a little side article from what the man was suggesting and saying. It turned out to be a three-page feature. But why I mentioned that is that this gentleman that saw this picture of Aidan de Bruin, he said, hang on a minute, I know this person. I know this picture. And so he read the article, he saw Jenny Davis's name, and he knows Jenny because he's a professional performer. And I knew of him, but didn't meet him or know him at that point. And he ended up going to his family photo album, got a photo out, sent it to Jenny, who sent it to me. And lo and behold, this photo is his grandparents with my mystery great-granddad in 1923 in Israelite Bay, which is east of Esperance down south, when he was doing the walk. And it's the clearest photo, and it's just like, oh, my gosh, how many other photos are out there?
Yeah, I wonder. That's a great look. I mean, you know, there probably are people maybe listening to this who have some connection to the story. Love to hear from you.
He walked all around Australia. Yeah. Crazily enough, he did it through the wet season up north. He went anti-clockwise Sydney to Sydney, and from 1921 to 1924, he called himself the amateur tramp, yeah, and then later on he changed it to the, what did he say? He said the Sydney Daily Mail pedestrian.
What sort of response was he getting for all the towns that he dropped in and visited?
Oh, he was famous. Actually, I've got a really cool story I haven't shared with anyone else yet. Well, I've shared it verbally, but I haven't shared it with any other interview. Is that when he started, everyone was calling him mad, of course. You would, right? And then as word got out, as he was travelling, word got out that he was nearing and coming through to town. People got excited, and he actually became very famous. Now, there was a town somewhere in Queensland, and I forget exactly where, but when he was getting used to the fanfare when he was arriving in towns. And he got to this town, and there was no fanfare, and he's talking, huh, you know. But apparently someone imitated him the day before. And they took all the fanfare.
He was getting free hotel stay. Everyone thought he was the man, but he wasn't. It's classic.
Some funny stories.
He used to, when he'd travel around, he would do speaking, speaking to people and letting them know about his adventures and his tour. And he even was a bit of a musician as well. He played a bit of piano too.
He sure did. So when, as Herbert, we knew that he was proficient on the piano. We knew that he played the piano for silent films in London. Prior to knowing anything about Aidan de Bruin and all that stuff, when we've been trying to find things, we found ads in local papers of him, tuition and everything. He's a master of pianoforte, all this sort of stuff. And so we knew he was proficient on piano and all that sort of thing. And funnily enough, he actually wrote a story about how to disappear. And in that story, it says something to the effect of, you can change your identity, you can move to another town, you can change your clothes and all that sort of stuff and your manner, you know, you can do as much as you can. But to the keen eye, there will always be someone that will fault you because they're looking for the mannerism. There's some mannerism that will fault you and will pick you up. And, in the diaries and everything, it says about how, you know, Aidan de Bruin entertained us for hours on end on the piano,
No, it sounds like a classic indeed. Look, I've got a text here that said, Cull's son lost his dad. And so this is your granddad, whose name was Lionel.
Yes.
He really did lose his dad, didn't he? Because his father stayed in Australia. He went back to England at the age of one, and he pretty much never saw him again. But
that's
obviously,
exactly,
he
yeah.
always had that question. And it was Lionel who drove a lot of the research, my understanding is that right?
Yeah. But
he was looking for his lost dad.
Yeah, well, yeah, but he never found him. But you know what gets me? Is that in 1938, there was an ad in the Sydney paper, that this is where it all tied everything together. And it said, wife looking for the whereabouts of Herbert Charles Cull, also known as Aidan Debrun. Now, without that, we would have had no idea.
Right.
No idea whatsoever. And that also tells me that great-grandma knew the other name, but she never told my granddad. Now, we all knew that she had a private eye trying to find him, and he was actually a missing person for something like 9 years, like officially.
Yep.
And so maybe she didn't know the name originally, but the private eye might have found it out, and he or she would have had to have told her that other name. Now, when we saw that ad, and I'm sharing that with my dad, he's gone, oh, he must have owed a lot of money. I said, Dad, look at the date. It's October 1938. That's her trying to find him to tell him that his first grandchild's been born, being my dad. My dad was born 30th of September, 1938. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and Dad just went, oh, yeah, I suppose so. Oh, yeah. You know,
Okay, so I've got a text here. Someone, Tracy, wants to know, why did he change his name? Which nobody really knows,
well,
that,
we're
do
we? We're never going to know why he changed his name or why he didn't want to know family, unfortunately, unless there's some letter somewhere. He actually, even though he was famous at the time, but why is this story lost? Why don't we, that's something that's crossed my mind a lot, is like, if this was so significant, why is it that we don't know this story? And, like, I've worked out, like, from knowing pretty much nothing about him and from reading his, I haven't read all of his stuff yet. I'm trying to read it in date order so I can get a feel for his life and where he was at, maybe, you know. And I reckon I've learnt a lot along the way so far, but I've worked out he had ego. I worked out he wanted fame, he wanted fortune, he wanted significance, he wanted respect. He wanted all of those big things, right?
Yeah.
And that are very important to, well, he wanted them all. He wanted them all. Okay. And I think that's important to a lot of people as well, but he was just like on a mission. And
a driven man, no doubt about it. You only walk around the country. Listen, one thing we haven't covered yet, his literature, because when he finished his walk, he started writing, and he didn't just write one or two books.
He wrote before, but he continued to write.
He really threw himself into it, and I couldn't believe how many publications he'd had.
I know. He wrote a lot, but a lot was publicised in newspapers. They were serialised, but not a lot was actually physically printed. Now, to find a book like that, we've worked out quite pricey.
Are they right? I was going to ask you. So have they become collector's items?
Yeah. So my daughter actually found a book of his that was printed, and it was in an antique bookstore in Adelaide. She found it online just doing a Google search or something like that. I had to buy the book. I was actually very broke at the time, and it was like finding everything I could to do this, because I would have kicked myself that I missed out on it to have that something physical. But it was $250 for this one book.
Oh, really? Wow.
And it was in near perfect condition. They reckon there's a slight bend in the spine. I can't see it. It looks pretty good to me. But, but no pages are turned or anything like that. And it's just like, just to have that physical thing. And that book's called The Dagger and the Cord. Now, all these books, mind you, are all free online to read.
Right.
So the researcher guy, because that's what he is to me, but he's also Colin, and I also call him Uncle Cole now because of the whole experience.
Fair enough.
But he's part of a thing called Project Gutenberg, and they preserve out of copyright literature. So when he does this for love, there's no financial gain for him or anything like that. So he stumbled across So when he saw that ad about Herbert Charles Cole and Aidan de Bruin in that paper, he was like, well, who's this Herbert Charles Cole? Hang on a minute. So he starts researching him. So then he finds himself on the genealogy boards, just sees a post by a distant relative of mine who I've been in touch with, and she ends up writing to me going, hey, Mel, check out the attached. This guy's researching your great-granddad, but he's not related. My initial being was, hang on a minute. He's not related? Like, have you fallen for a scam?
Sure.
So when I opened it up, my jaw hit the ground and I went, oh, my gosh, Dad, open your email now, et cetera. And that's when the rabbit warren opened.
Right.
How, the books.
How many did he write? How many novels?
I haven't even counted them. There are so many.
There's a lot, isn't there? I was amazed at his output there.
Yeah, and we don't know about his stuff.
Yeah.
Like, literally, as in, like, you know, I don't know about hanging out with, but I've seen an article where he interviewed Banjo Patterson. He even interviewed himself. You know, like.
Yeah, I can imagine that somehow. He was pretty good at the old self-promotion thing.
Yeah.
Also, when he was living in Sydney, when he was living in Sydney, he lived in a rather special location too.
He did. He was in Kirribilli.
Kirribilli and a place called Astoria House, was it?
Yeah.
Magnificent harbourside.
Before the Sydney Harbour Bridge was being built.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah. And it was being built at that time.
So, mixed in the right circles in Sydney. There's no doubt about that. So
So my head is like, why is it that we don't know about him? Why is that? If this guy's got ego and he knew how to promote himself and he knew, you know, all those things, why is it that we don't know? And I think it's a bit of a – I think it's because of – the bigger part is the ad and everything. Because he was actually – there was articles in the newspaper that said mystery writer is the subject of his own mystery, you know, and so he would have been outed. And one of the for who he really was, because one of the first things that the researcher guy, Colin, said to me, because he wrote short stories and novels and all sorts of things, is this short story called Once a Woolly. And he said, first thing you need to read is this. And it was a short story. And I'll try and do this real brief for you. But basically, he was writing in the third person, but I truly believe he was writing about himself. And there's this character, and he's walking along the Fetler tracks, so that's to do with the railway lines, etc. And he's looking for this guy. He gets to this Fetler's camp, and he's talking to this guy called Joyce. And he's explaining to this guy how he was promised the hand of this lady and for marriage. She's a lot younger than him, and he was explaining it. But then there's an enemy of his that discovered someone of the same name who had done all these horrible things but accused him of doing these things. And he's going, no, it's not me, and all this stuff. But then the marriage thing was not to happen. So he thought his only way of saving his grace was to find this guy of the same name. So that's why he's walking the Fetler track. So he gets to this Fetler's, and he's talking to this guy, Joyce, and telling him the story. And at the very end, he says, so Joyce, I can't remember the guy's name, but let's go with William Morris. So Joyce, where do I find William Morris? And he takes him about 10 metres and there's a grave. And he says, here lies your namesake. And in that moment when I read that, that was my great-granddad burying his past. Because one of the things he was accused of was leaving his wife and toddler in London.
Do you think that worked on him? Obviously, if you're thinking he's expressing it that way, but do you think it had a bigger impact on him? Did he live his life regretting that?
I don't know, but, you know, like this play that we just did, it really spelled it out really well as well. And it was like, to me, it took him 2.5 years to walk around Australia to get Herbert Cull out of himself. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's all hearsay, right? But, you know, he walked 10,600 miles in 897 days, and that worked out to be 29 months. Done all this math.
Yeah, you have, haven't you?
You know, it's impressive. And, you know, like, no matter what his personal scenario was, here is this guy that did this mammoth. I mean, In the wet season?
Yeah, no, it's a fair effort, no doubt about that. Yeah. I'm not sure anybody's done it since, have they? Circumnavigated Australia by foot. He was certainly
and
the first people.
Unassisted, no vehicle, yep. And I even joked saying no wheelbarrow.
There you go. Look, it's an amazing story, Melanie, and look, it's great to be able to talk about it this morning. As you say, it is perhaps something we should all know a little bit more about, but hopefully we're doing our bit to redress that now.
Thank you so much. And I really appreciate the time, even though it's like crazy early for me.
You'd be right, Mel. Hey, good to talk to you, okay? Thanks.
Thank you so much. If anyone would like to, like, follow the amateur tramp story as it grows and develops.
Melanie DeKalb, she's the granddaughter of the amateur tramp. Very interesting chat with our guest this morning. It is a story that is fascinating and one that probably we should know about in our history books. It was all about Aidan de Bruin. Who is the amateur tramp who walked around Australia on foot 100 years ago, pretty much to the day. Did it unassisted, didn't catch any trains or any trucks, or just walked, basically. An amazing story, too, as we just heard there. So if you're interested in more information about that, you can head off to the Facebook page and search for the amateur tramp, and you'll pretty much find that. So I think if you just go into Facebook and type in the amateur tramp, you should be able to track down that one. And it was great to be able to talk to his great-granddaughter this morning. Incredible story.